Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Men's Mental Health Show here on 89.1 RBM FM. Brad Spillane here, and just want to say a quick thanks to Mounties Group and also to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour hire in the manufacturing industry. Must be coming close to 150 shows. I know we've done well over 150 shows, but since we sort of started recording, it's a big feat that we're coming towards, and a big show ahead. We've got local Chief Inspector and Are You OK Ambassador, and we're here to talk about some new stuff he's got involved with Fortum Australia, Gary Sims. How are you, Gaz?
Going very well, thanks, Brad. Great to see you.
Yeah, it's been a while, mate.
It has, unfortunately, yeah.
What do the young fella say? It's been a minute. Isn't that right? Boaster, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good.
Was the Writers' Festival?
It was discombobulating. People everywhere. And all clutching novels that they've written.
Wow.
I'm a wannabe. You know, I'm sort of growing into the an identification. I'm coming out as a writer.
Great.
You know, even though I don't really know what that means and I've never written a damn thing. But I'm going to call myself a writer.
You've been a closet writer for this
I've been
time.
A closet writer for a long time. But what a line that leapt out in some of the discussions, because of some great discussions, what makes a writer, you know, I think it was a question. And the person in the panel, mostly women, and they were great presenters. You got to learn how to be startled out of the habitual mask you put on and walk around in.
Okay.
You have to allow yourself to be startled out of the habitual mask you put on as you enter into the world each day.
Okay.
If you have not got awe and wonder happening in your life, there's no way you can feed an imagination.
Right.
So I'm sitting in that, you know.
I'm sitting
in that. And I'll just love that notion that, and we know about this about the brain, that the brain loves to fill in gaps. It's doing that all the time. But if we allow the brain to actually determine what our world is in every given moment, and particularly the left hemisphere of the brain, we lose the other pieces of information that exist in that world as well.
Okay.
So that's why I use the word habitual mask. It's another way of saying what you think the world is about. You get up and you go, oh yeah, I'm going to be doing this and that. And I'm going to have that conversation with that person. The world is blowing itself up. I don't watch the news anymore. But I'm really into this guy.
Same day.
Same old. You fall into the habitual. Mask. And then you filter out all those moments of difference. So you've got to reclaim that territory.
I like that, man.
What do you think? Yes. It goes along with a lot of the stuff that's very important, isn't it, about being present, sort of knowing what's happening around you, and enjoying the things that are there, and not predetermining your thoughts. So, just going for a walk and having the time to look at the sky, look at the plants.
Taking that appreciation of things, isn't it, really?
Look, there's a really interesting reality that the world has now shifted so that there are more people living in cities than there are people living in landscape.
Right.
Now, what we know is that kids who live exclusively in cities have very little connection to landscape, are suffering what they call natural space deficit. They have insufficient contact with earth, with soil, with mountains, with water, waterfalls and rivers, and what it is to walk in that sort of space. So our history, our adaptation is for savanna, trees, hillside, mountains, you know, all those sorts of things, and green space. And green is really interesting because it's a calming phenomena. Even if you get a lawnmower out and cut some grass, the cut grass releases a gas. And that gas has a positive effect on mood. Yeah, who would have thought? So what I'm arguing here is that we have to begin to understand that we need to have a good-sized quota of the external world, the natural world, through walking, through... The Japanese talk about the need for forest bathing.
Right.
You need to sit in a forest and be bathed by the trees around you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't read all the sort of detail of what they think scientifically is going on. Mm. But I just love that notion of being bathed in the primal, primeval forest.
Doesn't it? I mean, they're the oldest human living race. They live longer than most people, the Japanese, particularly outside of the cities.
Yes, absolutely. And I was
sort of doco on that.
Yes. And I was listening to David King, who was talking at the festival.
I was going to ask, yeah.
And, you know, he said that we've learned to look at country. We're always looking at what the trees are doing, what the rivers are doing, what the plants are doing, in order to know patterns. There's an encyclopedia in our ability to read country.
Yeah.
It's telling us something all the time. Mm. So they're deeply immersed, or have been deeply immersed in that phenomena. And that's our history too.
Yeah.
I mean, 300 years ago, Europe was largely treed. And it's only very recently, over the last 300 years, is that we have lost so much of the forest canopy throughout the world. Yeah. So if we do best in a natural environment from a mental health point of view, surely the solution is to start to green up our cities, start to make sure that children have access to play in natural environments as a way of kind of connecting deeply to the sphere of this planet. Mm. And no wonder we have so many climate deniers or people who don't understand the sort of principles of ecology or regeneration or sustainability, because they live in cities and they live in a data-generated world via phones. Mm. And so a forest has no meaning.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was reading an article yesterday about young kids. It's an epidemic with their eyesight and short-sightedness.
That too.
Because they're not looking in the distance. We're looking at screens so much more.
Yep. And another phenomenon.
Yeah. It's
well, in a time that we've never been better connected as a race, you think of the computing power that we walk around with in our phones. You know, we've never been better connected, but as people, we've never been so poorly connected the things that are important. And when you talk about understanding the earth and the sciences, as you said, Bodhi, going back to our explorers, the people who navigated their ways from England and other overseas ports, doing it with the stars, the winds and the ocean currents, reading what was around them rather than a digital navigation system that kept them on cue. Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a sextant and just knowing the cycle of the seasons and how they'd have to encounter that, like Cook going for the transit of Venus and having to get there way before, knowing, you know, it couldn't be done without sort of working with the environment.
Mm. Mm. It's phenomenal when you think about it, isn't it? Yeah.
It is very interesting.
You know, I struggle with text messages. When I say I struggle with them, Gary will tell you, sometimes I can write theses, you know, they're that long. But I often miss out on words or, you know, I'll read it back afterwards and go, oh, maybe they could read it the wrong way. And because often if I'll go and ring people, they won't answer now. You know, the only person I think I talk to on a daily basis is perhaps my dad. But all my other mates, we're all communicating through texting and, you know, we're not calling each other anymore. You know, it's just a strange world we're living in.
That's true too. What's really interesting is from an attachment point of view, what we're beginning to see, you know, we have sort of categories like anxious attachment or avoidant attachment, you know, the attachment styles. What that means is that the person behaviourally has an anxiety about attachment, and that can show up as intense anxiety in the absence of a parent. So we talk about anxiety, separation anxiety.
Yeah.
Avoidant attachment is that understanding that a person is discomforted by intimacy or closeness, and so kind of does a runner. Men go into the shed at the back there and sort of disappear for a few hours. You know, I mean, they need that space. But I'm wondering if we're increasingly using devices as a way of communicating with each other, what are we losing in terms of the face-to-face?
Yeah.
Now, there's no doubt that face-to-face...
What are we creating, just as
you said? And what are we creating? Mm. And how is our brain changing as a result of these profound shifts of receiving information from the other?
There's the other side too, Bodhi, the FOMO, the fear of missing out.
Yep.
With young people that won't turn their devices off when they go to sleep because they don't want to miss out on something.
Yeah.
And their sleep cycles and the constant checking of the phones to make certain they haven't missed out on something.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And just breaking that rest cycle that is so important to people.
Absolutely. That is a serious problem, and that is a symptom that is untreated. Will lead to mental health issues of sometimes significant severity that interferes with the schoolwork, interferes with peer group relationships. There's a breakdown in the family system. Mm. The child becomes avoidant, if you like. Mm. I've seen boys, particularly boys, are very good at this, but it's not exclusively boys. Girls do it too. They treat their bedroom as a fort. Yeah, so it's an old-fashioned turret, with don't come in through this door unless you knock.
I thought it was only sisters that did that, you know.
But it's an electronic fort full of the devices and other things. So, and so that's their world. That's how they're apprehending the world is through their digital platforms. Mm. So what's interesting about that is, so if we accept the premise that we have, that we see as a sense, we hear, we taste, we touch, and we intuit, all these are senses, sense organs that come from the face-to-face, from interactions with real people. Mm. And we also have to learn to hear and listen and articulate a word back for a transaction to occur. Mm. With digital platforms, all of that disappears.
Yeah.
You're not talking back to it. You're not being asked a question of your device.
Yeah.
So it's a one-way street.
Yeah.
And it's relying principally on sight and sound. So touch atrophies. Yeah. And we can see it in the brain. People who are very concerned and interested in this sort of stuff are looking at what are the changes in the brain that is occurring as a result of our technology diminishing the way in which all our senses are accessed. We're living in interesting times, I tell you.
Yeah, so, very much so.
I keep thinking that mental health is not a diagnosis and it's not a problem of the individual who's failing to adapt.
Mm.
I think it is a far greater thing. I think it's a systemic shift from a relational world to an individualized world in which interactions are transactional. They're not there for meaning or for connection or for intimacy or for validation.
Mm. Yeah, it's a strange old world, isn't it? You put it like that. Yeah. I just keep thinking of some of the groups of mates that I'm sort of... We've connected, particularly we've not really seen a lot of each other in the last 15 years or so because obviously kids and everything else and then really missing out on that connection. You know, these eight of us in this group and three of them particularly are really struggling and they're looking forward to going to see you and my up in Woi Woi next month and one of them keeps putting down 24 sleeps. You know, tomorrow's 23. I think he loves his wife and kids, but he's just really looking forward to getting out and having that connection. And I said, you know, man, give me a call sometime. Let's, you know, well, when I ring you, I answer the phone. I think that's really important.
So many of our social structures and values have changed over time.
Mm.
You know, the reliance on things such as church, you know, numbers are dwindling.
Yeah.
Where there was a connection. Volunteer bodies, you know, you look at the great work that's done by people like Rotary.
Yeah.
And they're all an ageing group of volunteers.
Mm.
Sporting clubs, you look at country life where sport used to be very prominent. It's all dying on the vine. So the whole sort of structure of the way that we put our lives together has changed.
It's spot on, Gary. I mean, there used to be... 8 years ago, three divisions of cricket up here, just park cricket. Now, there's not one division.
Yeah.
So we've got Blue Mountains teams, but we're having to link up with Lithgow and whatnot. So it's a travel for some of these you know, cricketers alike. It's a shame, isn't it, that it's dwindling in numbers. You're spot on.
You know, country rugby league in a place like Bathurst, when I was out there refereeing, you'd have firsts, reserves and under-18s, and Bathurst had two teams, St. Pat's and Railways.
Wow.
Lithgow had a couple of teams. Orange had some two or three teams.
It's 3 hours travelling to play a game of bloody league.
Yeah, and over to Mudgee, they're all in the same group. But they had those three teams.
And little towns like Wellington would be, you know, doubling up with Dubbo or something, you know.
Yeah, and then the village competitions, which no longer exist, places like Rockley and a few other towns, had their own like village where sport isn't what it used to be in the country.
Anyway, look, let's jump into how you've been, Gaz. Like, let's talk to us a bit about football. We've had Christian Mortensen come on quite a bit, who's obviously a first responder as well and involved with the paramedics. It's wonderful that, you know, you two know each other. It would have been good if we could have had Christian on, but, you know, what it's like being...
Had a lot to do with the ambulance service since, you know, moved up here.
Yeah.
And we see the same faces at lots and lots of jobs. As hard as it may seem, there's another fellow called Darren who's a rabid North Sydney supporter. So we talk bears at accident sites.
Oh,
yeah, we keep sticking stickers on our emergency vehicles so people.
Is that you? That's all. Of course, okay. I've seen it on an ambulance once, but
yeah. So we have a lot to do with the emergency services up here. Obviously, working closely together.
Yeah.
So much so that, as you know, my daughter got married a week or so ago to a paramedic, and his uncle, Murray, is one of the ambulance inspectors up here who works with the SOTIs, the special operation teams. So we regularly see each other at jobs.
Yeah.
So we're turning up now where I've got a son-in-law, an uncle-in-law, and all these other people. So it's a very family... environment up here, that's for sure. Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful, man?
Yeah.
So is this a job shift, Gary? Are you no longer the inspector?
Yeah, police inspector, but our bread and butter up here is emergency work. Retrieval of lost people, suicides, motor vehicle accidents.
So
the emergency services being such a small area, you know, we turn up, it's the same fire, it's the same...
And your son-in-law's father, he's an inspector for the paramedics. So how about that, eh?
Yeah. So we did a job down in the Megalong Valley a while ago. Murray, the ambulance inspector, was there. Gary, the police inspector, was there. And Will, the paramedic, was there. So all family.
Okay.
So it gives you a lot of confidence when you're at jobs. It's just so brilliant. You know, we talked before about the value of connections and having those face-to-face things. That when you're turning up to a job... and you know the person that's alongside of you.
It must be a massive amount of confidence and relief.
Yeah. You know how they're going to work. You know they're reliable. You know that you can trust them to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And it just makes it so... And you have, you know, the normal sort of moments with them. Like we had a truck turnover at Mount Victoria a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And a car... Oh,
Christian told us about this, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And... so I got to that job, Murray got to that job, and we walked over to each other and said g'day, and he looked at me and said, how many people did you almost kill trying to get up here? Because the general public is very, very poor in terms of responding to emergency vehicles.
Really? Yeah. They're just not moving out of the way anymore?
No. Whether they've got their heads on into music or... They just stay connected.
Beggars belief half the time. I've seen some of the clips I see on that Dash Cam Australia, and it's the highlight of my week is watching idiots on the road or sometimes reading Lawson Locals on Facebook, the comments. That's really entertaining.
You know, we were hurtling through Medlow Bath there at the roadworks and...
Just on the Blackheath side, yeah.
Yeah, and this driver just stopped in front of me.
In the middle of the road, he hasn't pulled over into the shoulder.
No, just stopped. So you know, I'm pushing a Toyota Land Cruiser along at a good clip.
Three and a half ton.
Yeah, they don't stop easy. So no, we do. And Christian, he's we had a big emergency services breakfast at Springwood and Katoomba.
Okay.
Through some of the things that I do with Fordham Australia now.
Yeah, so talk to us a bit about Fordham.
Fordham...
it's F-O-R-T-E-M, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. Yeah. Fordham Australia, Protecting the Brave. It originally started to support our armed services.
Okay.
Yeah, yep, our soldiers, okay. Our airmen, our sailors.
Yeah, RAF and whatnot.
Yeah. So, you know, they work in areas such as career development for life after services.
Mm.
They also provide mental aid support for people that are doing it tough, and a whole raft of programs and activities for that. And Fordham recognised that our domestic heroes, the first responders, needed that support, so they've kicked off doing the same thing for getting our emergency workers together.
Mm. Terrific. So they're a non-for-profit organisation,
yes.
just like Beyond Blue or
yes.
you know Lifeline. And how long have they been with the first responders? Because I'd not heard of Fordham until you actually texted me a couple of months ago and said, "Hey, I've got to talk to you about this this new Fordham."
It is. It's new. It is. Within the last 12 months, they've been looking at emergency service workers.
Right.
They've been working with the military for a long time.
Right. Right.
We're all familiar with the struggles, that particularly our soldiers coming back from overseas.
Yeah.
So they are now working with people like myself and other emergency workers to just get out there and, once again, buddy, connect people.
Yeah, right.
And
okay. Terrific.
Yeah.
All right. And so what's your involvement with them? How are you, I know what you do with Are You Okay and with Walk and Talk for Life and...
Similar stuff.
Okay.
It's just getting people together, providing a point of contact, making people aware of the services that are available to them. You know, I've been fortunate to put a couple of police who have fallen on hard times onto Fordham. And because of the structure and the people that are there, it's a comforting feeling for emergency workers to be in that area where they understand what they've gone through.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing, isn't it? You know, particularly for you blokes and you know, your line of work and speaking to a couple of former police officers, current police officers. You know, I guess the one thing I've noticed with a lot of, you know, I used to have a copper that used to work for me for 4 or 5 years after he was in the detectives. And he was as tough as they come, but, you know, no one's immune to it.
That's right. I mean, you can't take a vaccine or anything for it. It's just up to the individual, really, and the support that they have around them.
Yeah.
And their approach to life, too. That's a very important part of doing that.
For sure. I think that's really interesting you say that, isn't it? It's there is no injection or inoculation from having reactions to emergency reality and work, but there is something about keeping people profoundly connected into the same networks, supportive networks that can enable them to process disturbing image that might be a complication. But also to keep validating the function of the role, because I think we have to valorise those people who step into these most extraordinary situations and continue to show up. And particularly when the public is sometimes a bit slow to express its appreciation, I think those sorts of services are crucial. But it also says something about the person's resilience, if you like, or you've got to have a certain attitude or mentality to do this work as well. I think it's
100%.
It is vocational. It is a vocation to do this work.
Yeah.
And it's only very recently that we've really started to switch on and understand the sort of demands of this particular work as frontline workers. And what I'm hoping for is that work continues, but it starts to leak into people who are frontline workers in retail or counselling services, that we look after the resource, the primary resource, teachers who are interacting with students with maybe multiple needs, you know, that we really do understand the attrition that can come from that if they're unsupported. And we have policies and structures and procedures and opportunity for that stuff to be attended to.
Yeah, I mean, can you believe it? You walk into a store and you see a sign that says, please don't be rude to the staff. And you think,
why do we need to have that, you know? Like, it's, but it's so pertinent for what's happening.
Yeah. I was talking to a lady at the post office and she said that the amount of just rude people that just pay out on them, you think.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch her name, but I heard the back end of a conversation on 702 the other day, a British female speaker. And I just caught her keynote summary at the end. And it was basically, my message for you is, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Be kind.
Yeah.
And just be human.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we talk about it often as well. We're so quick to judge. I don't know if it was because we were locked up so long through COVID. I just don't remember times like they are now, where we're calling people Karens, the anger levels are higher. You know, these the courts are sending more men to do anger management courses than they've ever done before. The statistics on that at the moment is phenomenal. It's horrible when you think about it. Like, if I have to have a sign to say be kind, well, what have we come to?
But I think picking up on what you were saying, is that in the absence of the community networks like church, that would have said, be kind to each other.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That would have been one of the central messages.
You were going to go to hell.
Yeah.
That had a certain cachet of sort of kind of effectiveness.
There was consequence for your actions. That's
that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. Yeah. There's consequences for your actions.
Yes.
You know, one of the groups that I'm in with these guys, they're just so quick to, you know, what's happening over there in Palestine and Israel at the moment, you know. My views are a little bit different from, I think they're both as silly as each other. And, you know, one of them's talking about just wipe the whole lot of them out. I said, do you remember what happened in 1940s? You know, like, it's just horrible. Like, how do you come to that way of thinking to wipe out a race of people?
Yeah, like, it's, sure. Absolutely.
You know, what are you talking about? You know, for 20 years ago, this bloke would never say anything like that. So I wonder what's happened in between that time, you know.
I was talking to the gentleman this morning, you know, Zoom sesh, and he was entering into a new relationship. They're about 6 months into the relationship and they're starting to think about marriage together. She's in the US and he's in Vanuatu, and they've been building this connection, and he's done pretty well for himself, and he can travel around the world and that sort of stuff. So,
wow.
But what's interesting is that his new partner confided to him that I have anxiety attachment disorder. And he said to me, what is that?
Right.
And heard the term. So I discussed stuff about attachment that's been around for a while, avoidant attachment, satisfactory attachment, anxiety attachment. Yeah. There's a whole number of levels of attachment theory that is worth looking at.
Yeah.
And this gentleman has been somewhat hostile to the idea of toxic masculinity. So I've been very interested in sort of kind of holding a conversation with him. And one of the things I'm actually discussing with him is, what might the one-dimensional man respond to a disclosure of his girlfriend to be wife that I have a anxiety disorder or anxious attachment.
Yes.
Which means that sometimes she rings him up to say, how are you? I'm sort of, you know, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of kind of questions. And sometimes...
Or she's leaving, where are you going? You know?
Can
I come? Yeah.
And sometimes men can feel as if they've been checked up on. But she disclosed that this is an issue for her. So we were talking about how might he take a multi-dimensional understanding of her disclosure, and how might he sit with that in a way that's responsive rather than dismissive.
And he should feel honoured that's revealed her vulnerability to him.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, spot on, I think.
Absolutely. And I think I often equate mental wellness, if you like, or mental health as not that you're not depressed, but that you have a wide raft of tools and understandings to navigate yourself in this world. So you resource yourself to have a full understanding of what it is to be a human. Using what you're saying, get over yourself, become human, and become tender. You know, bring some tenderness into your journey, into your voice. into the sound of your voice and the way you hold your body, your muscularity.
Yeah.
From babyhood on to the day we die, we have a phenomenal ability to keep scanning what's happening around us and with people around us. And we're picking up clues all the time, which is something like, is this good for me? Is this not good for me? Am I safe? Am I unsafe? I'm a little bit interested in this person. Is that an okay thing? So, you know, playing with consent. All that chat is going on back somewhere in the brain. It's not necessarily available to, I'm thinking about a lot of things today about this person that I'm sitting with at the moment. But that background stuff's happening all the time. So how might we start to tune into the cues that we give each other that are happening moment by moment by moment and be enriched by that so that we become fully human? So that idea of fully human. Because if you're paying attention to someone, that you're bringing all your faculties of sense and empathy and humanity into the picture. And that changes how you listen, how you feedback, the words that you choose. You even start to say, is that the right word for me to use? Or can I soften? Can I find another word that is less judgmental? And then the person that you're reflecting with, all their blood pressure, all the physiological signs. Now, look, I'm not talking out of a hole in my head. This has all been done scientifically. They wire people up all the time, checking for respiration, heart rate, blood pressure, all that sort of stuff. And we know that the science of and the difference it makes when you calm yourself down for an important conversation with someone that is either has authority over you or is a subordinate.
Well, this bloke's doing that every day, isn't he? And his office.
That's true. You know? That's true. So we could say he's an expert.
Well, we could, but also too, it's not always the outcome or the agenda that you think the other person you're communicating with is what they're after. Like this attachment. I mean, I keep talking about this group. It's so funny. One of the guys isn't coming to the concert, and one of the other guys says, "Oh, his wife wouldn't let him." And I said, "Well, maybe he's enjoying that time or that connection that they're so close." Wherever he goes out, she said, he rings him two or three times. Maybe it's not control. Maybe she's not trying to control him. Maybe it's just the fact she has an attachment anxiety. You know, so there's always an ulterior motive behind things.
Absolutely. There's always always a function. There's always a reason.
Yeah, of course.
Why things occur.
Yeah.
They don't happen because you're just a difficult person. You know what I mean? There's something that has happened that has caused this, that particular problem to sort of kind of show up. After all, it's a symptom, and symptoms tell us something.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to be able to sit in the symptom and say, what is it that you're trying to let me know about? It's an alert to something. So people often say, please take the symptom away from me. It's very discomforting, or it's causing problems in my relationship. Yes, of course, I understand I want to be relieved from a symptom because I can see it's causing problems. But let's also ask it, when did you begin being concerned? What are you wanting to tell? What's the real story? And if you get a person to sit into a particular voice, like an inner critic, you'd be astonished what you hear. Some of the bile that I've, you know, when I've asked people to really sit into a voice that they're discomforted by, their own voice, it's hateful.
Yeah.
It's murderous.
It is,
You know, and they are in shame about it. And it's tyrannical. I mean, that's the other problem. And we all have inner dialogue going on.
100%.
This is not a schizophrenia sort of phenomena exclusively. Yeah. It's a human phenomena. Very interesting.
I notice that with levels of paranoia in certain people. You know, we're talking the other week with John about what's he call fact, you know, flexibility agent, curiosity test. But then, you know, I won't mention any names, but, you know, with someone close in family-wise, it's always questioning that. It's like they're looking over the shoulder the whole time, or what's the purpose of what, or why are they doing that, or how come they've asked me something like that? It must be because of this, you know? That's a massive part of training for you guys as well, isn't it, Gaz?
A lot of those things that that you mentioned in terms of the wiring of safety and checking for my profession. If I go out with my daughter for dinner, so you've got two people that can't sit with their back towards the door. So we raced
to the seat,
the safe seat, where you've got vision of entrances, you've got your exits lined up, and you do your scan.
Isn't that amazing?
Scan the room.
Isn't that amazing, man?
Simple things such as when we go to a door, we automatically turn side on.
Wow.
And not, you know, step to the side, turn side on, so you're not presenting a potential target on the other side. And those things just happen automatically in terms of that.
And that just makes you who you are every day too, doesn't it? You know, like inside and outside of work.
Yeah, and you've got to be careful.
And wonderful skills to be able to develop. But
you, it can
keep your life.
Impact a lot of people once they start getting, if they lose control of that.
Mm.
And sometimes I'll deliberately sit just to see how uncomfortable it feels with my back to the door at a restaurant, and it's awkward. It makes you itch.
Very interesting.
The constant need to be able to see people's hands. And they're just the things that...
sound like my psychiatrist. He's always trying to look where my hands are whenever I go and see him. You know, what's his hands doing?
Yeah, where are his hands? Show me your hands.
It'd be worse in the States too, you know. Like, oh, God, my God.
Yeah.
I actually had to click those things. You know when you get on the Facebook feed and it says show more and show less? I just have to keep going, show less. I'm just overwatching these confrontations over there. It's amazing. We're just so fortunate here, I guess, that our you know, cops are not as, confrontational or, you know. It was interesting. We were talking about it the other week that Chris, Minns, sending some of our leading police officers over to the UK to learn how de-escalation tactics. And how's that come about, do you think? You know what I'm saying? Have you heard about that? Like he's, I don't know.
Well, it's always an evolving science, and there's plenty to learn from overseas jurisdictions, particularly the ones that are very similar to what we do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I think we sort of we're doing okay here at the moment. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a bit of bad press about you blokes, you poor buggers, like what happened down south or with the elderly lady. But I think what's important to note is we're all humans, man. We're always making, you know, mistakes and whatnot. But kudos to you guys for doing that, man. And we need to just get back to being a little bit more kinder and less judgmental and having you back to the door, guys.
I got to follow that woman up that I listened to because she was her parting comment was, there's not many problems you can't solve in this world by sitting down with a cup of tea and a piece of cake.
Yeah, have a good discussion, hey?
Just have a talk.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about how the anger and things filters out and don't be rude to shopkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a flow-on problem from social media.
Yeah.
Where people have gotten used to, they can say what they want.
Mm.
They're not confronting anyone face-to-face with a comment. You know, they can sit there blindly at a keyboard and type what they want.
Not see.
You mentioned before, Brady, about the sight being an important part of being human.
Yes.
Not being able to see the hurt in someone's face when you insult them.
Exactly.
Mm.
Exactly.
Mm.
Not seeing that they're confused by a comment and that ability to truly communicate.
Yeah. Because that is all part of the communication, is the senses that we've got to interpret what's happening for the other and for ourselves.
That's right. Well, what's that old communication cycle, sent, received and understood? That's communication.
That's communication.
You take away the understanding, you're not communicating.
Well, it's
what we're seeing over there in the Middle East at the moment. It's a lack of communication between the leaders. You know, it's interesting. I hear some leaders in both of those communities on social media, leaders, when I talk about that, people like Ben Shapiro, I watched a bit of that. And, you know, I would have thought Ben, being right-wing and Jewish, fire a lot of personal remarks towards the Palestinians, Gaza, Hamas or whoever, and he hasn't. He's just come out and said, the only way this is going to change, we change leaders, both sides, and start communicating.
Mm.
So it says a lot, yeah.
I had a commander once who made a decision that impacted a lot of people, and someone said, oh, have you spoke to the staff about this? He said, yes, I told them yesterday. That was his consultation.
I told him yesterday. We work as a team, we do it my way.
Yeah.
I like that. Men's Mental Health Show. We're here with Inspector Gary Sims and Bodie Marsden. Of course, Bodie's a psychotherapist located at Wentworth Falls. You can get hold of Bodie on 0424 416 969. 0424 416 969. Coming up towards 10 to 12, we've not much longer to go. What else is happening with you guys? What's happening with Christmas? What's going on, man? What have we got lined up for this warm weather we're in? And
in December, first week in December, I'm heading to NZ to spend some time with my sister, a week, flying over there with Annette. And my sister has just moved from Te Aratu.
West Australia? No, right, sorry.
No, this is in New Zealand.
New Zealand, right.
NZ.
Yeah.
And she's now down at Tauranga.
Beautiful.
And she's close to...
Got lots of uncles and relatives there.
Yeah. And she's got one of my brothers down there, and she's got her son and children and a wife there. So... it's a very recent shift. She's been in Te Aratu for 71 years. She's
been,
so we're talking about a big shift.
Wow,
and she's
man.
Going, Bodie, I need guests. I need, come on over. I'm finding the big shift has challenged me, and I'm sort of struggling a little bit. So I need family around.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, absolutely. Sis, I'll come over. So we'll.
Mm. There's no better place at Christmas than Tauranga in New Zealand.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's incredible. You've got Mount Maunganui, you've got Bay Oval. It is the entertainment capital of New Zealand, you know, at that time of the year. Really.
I
know the first time I went there, I was doing a job in the dive industry and flew in, checked into the hotel. Rang up, I ordered some takeaway food and called a taxi to take me down to pick it up. Taxi turned up, drove me around the corner.
This is very...
I said, mate, I said, look, I'm sorry, I had no idea where I am. And this Kiwi said, oh, mate, don't worry about it. I said, it's not worth charging. I said, mate, back in Sydney, a cabbie would have stabbed me for that. So... we parted friends. I went into the restaurant, and the restaurant owner said, "Oh, mate, Cookie Boy's having a shocker. Your meal's going to be another 15 minutes." I said, "That's okay." He said, "I'll shout your beer."
Oh, did he?
Of course, you have to wait. I said, "Really?
Yeah.
You don't have to do that." He said, "No." He said, "You shouldn't have to wait. It's just a beautiful town." And
It's because they've got at the northern end of Tauranga, of course, is Mount Maunganui, right? And every year, I think it's on. I'm pretty sure it's on New Year's Day, they have the mountain bike race to the base from the top of Mount Maunganui to the base. And, you know, speaking of Christian, there's about 15 ambulances, you know, because Kiwis have always been the leaders in extreme sports, really, you know, bungee jumping and various things they do. But these guys go down that mountain on their push bikes. Some of them are flying through the air, good 10, 15 metres if they're going head over... you know, on the handlebar, just crazy stuff. And then they've got I think on Boxing Day, it's the World Championship arm wrestling thing. And you see some of these, you know, Maori. Some of them have got biceps like my torso. Massive, massive men. Yeah. But I love it. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. You go down there and watch some cricket as well. And oh, good on you, man. What are you up to? You're heading over. Overseas, surely, aren't you?
Well, on Friday we head to Fiji for a week, then back to work after that, early November. Christmas is still a little bit far off for us.
Yeah.
When you think of a family that has two police officers and a paramedic, we've got no idea what our roster is at the moment.
Yeah.
But no doubt it'll be upon us and pass very quickly at the time. Just
how's
so
your drone
fast.
Flying going? You're still really getting into that and enjoying it?
Yeah, I was down the south coast and got the drone up only a week or so ago.
Okay.
Been doing a lot more still photography.
Yeah, terrific.
Been doing some courses here in different places.
Good on you, man. Kudos, brother. That's...
And that is a very important part of my wellbeing program.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Like yesterday, grabbed the camera and went out to... Coach with Glenn at Megalong Valley, and it's true what you say, into the green.
The
air's cooler.
Yeah.
Gang cockatoos flying over, gentle sound of water, lots of moss and things around you, and you just feel good.
has a direct impact upon mood, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you were talking about all the anger management that the courts are sending sort of young into.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that, you know, one idea that is a good way of actually balancing out the anger response is to actually have a list for yourself, either on a card or on your phone or in your notes, of the things that you have gratitude for.
Yeah.
And try and hit that, you know, 5 or 7 times a day, just to ground you in an other reality other than the sort of usual irritations and frustrations that then can blow or escalate into an anger response.
Yeah. So, lady said, get over yourself.
Get over yourself, exactly.
It's the one thing that I've noticed of all people that go through addictions, like I went to the Salvation Army to visit a mate there, you know, people that are in rehabs, people that are in long-term stay building, people that are going to courses at work to restructure the mind, gratitude's always the number one thing on the top of the list. You know, my young fella, he's gone off to spend a bit of time with John, and John's number one thing, he's taught him about that, about being appreciative and being grateful for what he has.
Fantastic. You
know? It's a wonderful thing. Good on you.
I want to talk about Zoe that was telling us last week.
Yeah.
It's not okay not to be okay.
Mm.
And I was, it's a line for a poem for me. I'm going to write a poem about this.
And
bring it to the show. I've got a poem here as well. But I think it says something that it's not okay to not be okay.
Mm.
It's like we have to be heroes on every moment.
Yeah.
And if we slip or fumble, somehow or other, that's a collision, that's a problem, and we can be very hostile on ourselves. And inevitably, if you're hostile to yourself, you become hostile to others. So I think that it's a really, we talk about vulnerability, don't we? How might one grow an ability to say, gee, I don't know.
Mm.
It's been vulnerable. But how many times when somebody has asked me a question, I've gone, not, I don't know. I've gone, you know, I make up a bloody great big story. Because no wonder in our telling of stories that it becomes an opinion because there's no substance, there's no basis to it. You're making it up in your head as you go.
Yeah.
But I want to move off from that. Sometimes in couple work, one of the exercises you give couples, it's very funny. So they're having an argument about a particular issue, and most of the time when they come in my room, they can't even remember what the argument was about. They just know that they're really angry and upset with each other. So what I say to them, okay, look, there is a bit of an exercise. I want you to go take this exercise home, and I want you to slow down your argument. How do we do that? Okay. So first, you've got to decide who's going to go first. Now, please don't turn that into an argument. Just make a decision of who's going to go first.
Yeah.
And then you have a clock. So it's a bit like playing chess. It's a 2 at a time.
Yeah.
The first person will talk about an issue that's pertinent for them, and they've got 2 minutes or 5 minutes. You decide how much time you give each other to express the...
And no interruptions during this
And time. There's absolutely no interruptions. Right. Your job...
And no jokes.
Person who's, and no jokes and no snorts and no eye rolls and no mock horror, throwing your arms up in the air and all that sort of stuff. Your job is to listen.
Yes.
Then the next thing is after the other has done their 2 minutes or 5 minutes. And, of course, what's really funny is when I say to men and women who are fighting with each other, you need to sit down and talk for an hour a day.
Right.
And the guys, you know what they go?
Yeah.
An hour!
I can imagine if my man's listening to this.
And I get it. I get it. It sounds like climbing Mount Everest, you know what I mean?
And the big difference between talking to and talking with.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
Mm.
Anyway, say the lady has, the woman has spoken first, and she's, let's say she has 5 minutes to say what she said.
Sure.
His job is to feedback, mostly using her words, what she said.
Oh, okay.
Right. And he's got 2.5 minutes for that. To paraphrase, to feed back what he thought he heard.
Mm. Mm.
She's listening. Mm. Now he's talking.
That'd be very interesting.
Mm. It's really interesting. Yeah.
What a great exercise.
And then she has now the an opportunity to say what he picked up on that was accurate and what he picked up on that is not what she said.
Yeah.
Or he's interpreted differently to what she was saying.
Yeah.
So then it's her turn now to clarify that, where he's picked up his own, he's put his own ad on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
On what she said.
Yeah.
And it totally distorts what she's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it's his turn. He's got 5 minutes. Either build on top of what she said or to bring in his grievance.
Yeah. It's wonderful, isn't it? And it's incredible the amount of ground that is gained in conversations like that once that space is created. That safe space of, you know, there's no outcomes from this. There's no...
Because normally someone, they're listening to the other side, and all they're doing is formulating what they're going to say.
And we're going to now put this away, get my artillery ready, I'm going to fire back. Yeah.
Waiting for them to stop and then I'm going to return serve. Mm, and they say, well, I didn't actually listen to what you said. Yeah, so it's one of those things, you know, you need to be in the moment sort of take in what people are saying and move it from there.
It's an enormous and powerful thing.
So we're slowing things down.
Yeah.
And, of course, couples who manage the exercise and actually start to sort of perform it start to have different types of conversations because they are clearly checking in with each other in a much more substantive way. And what they start to report each time, and so it's a bit like the fact, if you're flexible, you've got agency, you've got curiosity, and you test the evidence, you'll get a result.
Mm.
And the result is increasing closeness. Mm. The other
powerful, positive.
It's wonderful. You know, look, the other.
Kudos, John. By the way, he listens every week.
Yeah, the other exercise, which is a bit of fun, if couples have started to drop off and having sort of sexual, you know, physical intimacy.
Connection. Yeah.
So I tell them, okay, so for the next fortnight, I want you to hold hands, get close, give each other hugs.
Yeah.
A kiss is permissible, but no sex.
Right.
No sex.
I bet how much success you had with that, though. You know,
they always come back. They always come back in the fortnight giggling. Oops,
we can't do that. You know? That's like when I take Munster for a walk and I see some couples holding hands. I go, excuse me. You can't hold. There's a sign. You know? They look at me like I'm weird.
So what you're doing is playing with instruction. It's a prescription that they're dying to break because actually what you discover is they really want to get connected again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I always enjoy that exercise.
Going back to the times when the relationship was exciting by doing those things.
Absolutely.
Well, that's because that's what they used to do,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
You know, conversations are strange at times. You know, I only thought the other day that it was a really unusual way for Amanda to start a conversation by saying, you don't listen to me.
Mm.
You don't listen to what I say or something. So
I do that. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Or I'll get to the end of what I'm saying, and then there'll be a response, and I'll say, hey, did you listen to what I said? Maybe I'm not listening or connecting into what she's trying to say at the same time.
Mm.
But
Be present, be in the moment.
Listen deeply to what's been said. Suspend your own argument back. I guess the anxiety is that if I listen, will I at the end, when it's my turn to say something, I've got nothing to say because I haven't been doing the prep.
Yeah,
I've been doing the prep while she's talking. So how might you talk about that as a couple? And guys often say, I can't compete. You know, she's torrent of words comes out at me and I'm struggling to sort of kind of remember or even what is it I really want to say? What are the right words for me to say something?
Yeah.
And I think that does tell us about how language has become functional for men. I need that spanner. Please pass that spanner to me. Mm. But when you're talking about how you're feeling about something, if that's not rehearsed reasonably often, of course it's a very difficult thing to say when she says, well, what's going on for you? What are you feeling right now?
Yeah.
What sort of question is that? A man often says.
I think if we're able to be in that moment and to listen like that, it invites that sort of question or conversation from her or from your partner. Doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, as opposed to the look that says you're entitled to your opinion no matter how wrong you are.
Look, I reckon we're onto something here about this freedom of speech idea, because freedom of speech, as it was framed in the Constitution in the US of A, mm-hmm. was to say that important ideas that are not held by the majority but are still important ideas is an idea of free speech, and we must, in finding solutions to problems of our for coexistence, hear all the viewpoints which hold an element of truth if we are to create solutions that embody all the wisdom that we can derive from our thinking. Mm. So that was the original premise of free speech. Mm. But what it's become diminished by this idea that I can say anything on the basis I've got the right to have free speech.
Yeah.
But I can be hateful. I can tell lies. I can create stories that are based on untruth. Now, one example of this, which I think is really interesting, is this idea that in the referendum we recently held, there was an idea that the Aboriginal race are totally divided on this voice issue. But what's really interesting is that out of all the polling booths right throughout Australia, Aboriginal people overwhelmingly voted yes for the voice.
Yeah.
So how we hold on to a truth, I think that's an obligation for all of us, is to actually speak from a truth, not from an advantage that you want to make or pursue, or an agenda or idea that you've got. Mm. I mean, that we're venturing into dangerous territory.
Absolutely.
When we depart from some sort of honesty, some basic honesty in what comes out of our mouths.
Well, what's that old saying? Is it the truth? Is it of value? Do I need to hear it?
Okay.
And if those things are all in the negative, don't give me gossip.
Don't give me gossip.
No, interesting, boys. Just got me thinking of new things, isn't it? A lot more fascists out there these days, isn't there?
We're
trying to make people align with our, you know, way of thinking, and whether it's the truth or whether it's not, it's...
One of the things that I always enjoy having a look at is a drawing of two men standing over the figure six on the ground. So one man standing...
Seeing a nine. Yeah.
One sees a nine, one sees a six. They're looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
And either of them right or either of them wrong.
Yeah.
You know, we see things and you just need to move on with it. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Tell you another good conversation thing that works very well is that recently my good doctor down at Wentworth Falls, who's doing a splendid job trying to keep the body healthy, his encouragement, I've gone along, I've started seeing a psychologist just to stay well in the back end of my life.
And I was down
down there talking to her the other day, and discussion to go along. And then she just went quiet, and then I started talking some more. Mm. She'd ask another question, and there was some silence. I'd talk again. Then I said to her, I know what you're doing. You're using the appropriate use of silence on me to make me feel uncomfortable, so I'll keep talking.
Yeah. My biggest problem, you know, that uncomfortable moment of in silence, like something has to be said.
Yeah.
You know?
We use that in... in questioning.
Well, I know that. It's part of the interrogation technique, isn't it?
Yeah.
Watching that... I've watched the doco on Netflix, that parachute. I don't know if you've seen it, where a couple, husband and wife couple were... You know, they used to parachute a lot. He checked the parachute and he tampered with it. She's fallen 5,500 feet, but the ground had recently been ploughed. Her reserve chute didn't work and she survived, this woman. Right. I mean, it was coercive control 101, right? She finally got into court and she pretty much lied to say, you know, she still supports her husband when they showed all of these affairs and whatnot. But
she was falling for him.
But yeah, yeah. Boom, boom.
there's a recent film, The Killing of the Flower Moon.
So this is De Cappuccino and De Niro. That's Leonardo De Cappuccino. I don't even know what his real name is anymore. I just call him that. But yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's coming out with Scorsese film.
Scorsese. So it has De Niro as one of the main actors and DiCaprio.
That's it.
And another woman who plays Molly. But what's really interesting is the relationship between the white guy played by DiCaprio and the Osage Indian woman and the almost fatal kind of attraction to each other for different reasons.
Yeah.
That becomes a huge distortion. And ultimately causes, a massive rupture in that relationship.
Yeah.
It's a powerful story of the way that relationships, when they're constructed on a basis of greed or deceit, cause such suffering.
Yeah,
powerful relational story.
Yeah, worth watching. I'm really looking forward to watching. I'm in a wonderful
position. It's on
at the moment. Yeah, because I've not seen Oppenheimer or the Moon one, the Scorsese film.
Mm. Yeah. The getting back to what I was saying with that appropriate use of silence.
Mm. Yeah, beg your pardon.
Yeah, no, it's just something that came to. I was thinking of what Buddy was saying about those relations with couples, sort of sorting out their differences. What a wonderful way for someone, when they are having those situations, to say, well, okay, they've had their say, so now, rather than me jump straight back in, I'll let there be silence, give them the opportunity to say anything else. And then the other thing that would be so good in those situations is to have people just focus on their breathing, getting their breathing back under control, settling down the nervous system, clearing themselves, just becoming settled, rather than taking on that reaction to people and wanting to engage. Those good simple breathing exercises of six breaths in, four out, just hold it and slow your body down or slow your mind down and help you communicate better, because you're more in that moment of controlling the anger and the emotion.
Pure gold, guys. What are you saying?
It is, man. It's absolute gold.
The same with our bugbear with communications. You know, you'll get on there and I think we all would be guilty of it at times. You see something and you do this response, and before you hit the send button, you look at it that delete. I'm not going to send that.
Yeah, I've done that a few times.
The flame emails.
Just
take a moment and just settle yourself down and go from there.
Good advice, boys. Good advice. Something like, once I said to you, Gaz, mistakes are the greatest things in life, and you said to me, not if you keep making the same ones over and over, Bradley. So I say to you, something that could have been brought to my attention 20 years ago, but thanks.
That's what I said to my commander. I said, I learned so much from the mistakes I made. This was in the staff review.
All right. Yeah.
He said, I've really learned a lot from the mistakes I've made this year. My undertaking is to you, I promise to make twice as many next year.
Oh, good.
And he said,
it makes me feel so much better.
He said, I think that's good, perhaps.
I like that.
So keep making mistakes as long as you learn from them.
Good to see you again, guys. Thanks for coming in, man.
That's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
We'll do it again. I think the next time we're the first responders, we'll have the Moors come in as Christian Mortensen come and join us. And we'll have a good discussion on things, It's, I always like getting Moors in here. He loves to tell a story.
Yeah.
He's very good at telling some stories. And they're wonderful stories with some wonderful morals behind them, aren't they both?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And thank you, mate.
If we're not here next week, which we may be, we're back with John. John Millam's going to join us in a few weeks' time. John's located in the Northern Beaches as well. If you wanted to get hold of John, you can on 0422 672 049. He's a life coach. Bodie's a psychotherapist. You can, if you want to have a chat to Bodie, give him a call, 0424 416 969. Big thanks to Mounties Group and to all manufacturing personnel as well, and to 89.1 RBM FM. Got along to the barbecue on Sunday. I was the cook. Yep, showed my vulnerable side, chopped up a few tomatoes. Onions.
Where'd they do that at?
Bunnings.
Do they?
Yeah. Got stuck into it, mate. I was just, it was a constant flow of,
We had a big event on the weekend. One of our workers is unfortunately terminally ill, and the guys and girls did a run and a bike ride from Mount Victoria Police Station down to Glenbrook, and we ended up down at Glenbrook Oval, and good people from Rotary did our barbecue down there for us.
Oh, good on them. Terrific. I didn't even know there was a cop shop up at Mount Vic. Anyway, that's little do I know. I mean, once you go west of Katoomba, things are a little bit different, shall we say. All right, we'll leave it at that. Okay, it's a Men's Mental Health Show. I was just not being judgmental. I was just being unkind. All the best, everyone. And I hope to see you next week. Thanks again to Gary Sims and to Bodie Marsden. All the best, guys. Bye-bye.